Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1291, we feature three stories by new Life Rattle writer, Afreen Chowdhury. Afreen Chowdhury's love for hot weather spread it from her birthplace. She was born in Dubai in 1990. Afreen immigrated to Canada when she was 10 and has spent most of her life as the primary caregiver of her disabled mother. As a result, Afreen has always been curious about the human mind and physical health. During an 8th grade career class, she discovered the field of psychology. Afreen followed her curiosity to university, where she focused on health psychology. Afreen Chowdhury now volunteers with chronic illness patients, helping them learn how to cope psychologically and socially with their illness and life. She hopes to continue on to graduate studies and eventually work in healthcare. In all three stories that we will hear tonight, Afreen Chowdhury shows great talent for taking the listener to a distinctive place, be it another country, a classroom, or a hospital emergency department. We're right there beside her. In tonight's first story, a very bright young girl employs her distinct cultural background when she's caught in a tight spot in the classroom, then has doubts when her conscience nags her. Let's listen now to Chocolate, written and read by Afreen Chowdhury.
Chocolate by Afreen Chowdhury. 30 second graders with pink noses and flushed cheeks walk in a single file line down the hallway of Oak Ridge Elementary School. Clog, clog, our Disney and superhero winter boots march in a line. Snow and slush slide down my purple snow pants onto the cream-tiled floors. I frown as I watch the large brown doors lock behind us. Then the warm smell of the heat hits my face and makes me smile. I enter the class and walk to my cubby at the back of the room. Two rows of small cubbies wait for little hands to stuff them with wet hats, dirty mitts, and scarves. I stand in front of my cubby and begin to remove endless layers of winter clothes. I take off my soggy purple gloves with glitter stars. I look at my red hands. They sting from the cold. I yank off my hat, scarf, snow pants, boots, and winter jacket. They drip with snow water. The pond on the floor splashes my jeans as the classmate runs by. I wrinkle my nose. Please quickly sit down at your desks, Mr. Atkinson orders. I sit down at my desk. Maps and hand-drawn pictures of people, animals, places fill the wall on my left, and giant windows take up most of the wall to my right. I look back and watch as the last of my classmates reach their desks. I face the front again, dangle my feet, and wait for the teacher's instructions for the next lesson. Today is Wednesday. That means it's show-and-tell time. Please go to your cubby and get your show-and-tell. Then sit down quietly on the big rug. Mr. Atkinson smiles and sits down on the wooden rocking chair next to the big rug. My mouth breaks into an open smile, revealing my two missing teeth. Show-and-tell time happens every other Thursday. I mark down the dates on my kiddie calendar and then choose the toys I want to bring. But today is different. I forgot. All of my classmates crowd at the back of the class and take out their show-and-tell stuff. I sit at my desk with my elbows on top and chin in my hands. I imagine there has to be something here that I can use for show-and-tell. I search around and inside my desk. I spot a yellow pencil, workbooks, and a mini M&M's container. I pick up the tube-like blue container and notice that it's half full of M&Ms. I smell the chocolate, then shake the container and listen to the M&Ms rattle inside. I get an idea. I'll pretend this is a musical instrument. If anyone becomes suspicious, I can say it's an object from my culture. Most students sit at the front of the class on a large round rug with colorful rings inside like a jawbreaker candy. My shoes squish in the damp carpet from the students who didn't change their wet boots. Almost everyone holds something for show and tell. I sit down and keep mine hidden between my crossed legs. I wonder if anyone will be able to tell it's just an M&M container. Mr. Atkinson moves his finger left to right around the circle. Let's begin from that end, and we will go around this way. The first boy explains his toy. This is my favorite car. My brother bought it for my bur. His voice fades as I look back at my container and realize that it still has the M&M's label on it. My eyes widen. I rip it off and sit on it. I look at Mr. Atkinson and then back at the label as it peeks out from under my butt. What if he thinks I'm a bad student? I chew on the inside of my mouth. Half of the students around the circle have made their presentations. My stomach begins to hurt and hurts more as the turns pass on. I keep looking at the M&M's container and back at the person presenting. I should not show it, should I? My hands become sweaty. I think I should, maybe. My turn nears. I begin rehearsing what to say. This is a musical instrument from my country. It's like a rattle. No one else in my class comes from Bangladesh, so no one should know that I'm lying. Afreen, it's your turn, Mr. Atkinson says and beams. My body heat rises and my face turns red. I swallow the little bit of spit I have in my mouth. I brought this. I hold up the blue mini M&M's container. My stomach drops. This is a traditional musical instrument from my country. I shake the container. My stomach drops more. It makes noise when you shake it like this. I gaze around the circle and then at my teacher. Mr. Atkinson makes a crooked smile. Guilt settles into my heart as I put my lie back into my lap and the turn moves on. I peer at Mr. Atkinson again. He stares down at me and looks away.
That was Chocolate, written and read by Afreen Chowdhury. That was Chocolate, written and read by Afreen Chowdhury. Tonight's second story is also written from the viewpoint of a child, but this time, particularities she shares of her culture are real. Let's listen now to Afreen Chowdhury read her story, Tradition.
Tradition by Afreen Chowdhury. My cherry sandals flip-flop as I trail pallid ducks at my grandparents' farmhouse. Patches of dead, dry grass prickle my heels, annoying flies tease my ears. Afreen, I hear my father's voice echo in the distance. Go call Afreen, my grandmother directs, a scrawny chakor, male house worker. I observe the chakor's bare feet slap against the mucky path as he races toward the fish pond where I play. My body jolts when he halts in front of me. I tilt my head and watch the wet ducks waddle away. Your grandmother is calling you, the boy announces, then sprints back in the same direction. I scamper after the chakor. He guides me to a large pile of dead mango tree leaves. I wrinkle my nose at the flies haloed around the steaming fresh pile of manure. My eyes travel to my grandmother waiting with my father. She ties her sparse, argent hair in a tight bun, pulling back on her scalp, and tucks the loose part of her cream-colored sari into her petticoat. Although short, my grandmother is the queen of this palace. "Eh, go bring me a good chicken," she commands a dirty jaguar. His dry, mud-covered legs disappear behind a little chicken house made from woven strands of thick hay. "Afreen, come here," my father says, gesturing with his tanned hands that match his bare head. I cock my head when I notice his rolled-up sleeves and pants and shamble towards him. Obedient jaguars and jacaranis, female house workers, stand next to my grandmother. They look unmistakable with their dark skin and malnourished bodies under torn clothes. One of them looks about 10, my age. My father points to a boy bustling towards us and tells me, "Grandma bought this chicken for you." The young jaguar clutches the wings of a live brown and white chicken as if he has done this his whole life and presents it to my grandmother. She secures the chicken with her wrinkled, tawny hands and then turns and smiles at me. "Are you ready to experience traditional Bengali culture?" The jaguars and jacaranis smile mischievously, like Cruella de Vil looking at the puppies in the movie 101 Dalmatians. My grandmother shifts her right hand to the chicken's neck to steady the head. Her other hand braces the legs to make it difficult for the chicken to escape. She lowers the animal to the ground. I recognize the chicken's frightened eyes and see that its body resists my grandmother's firm grip. I can feel the bird's cries. My hands grip my blue dress. My sunburnt toes curl into my dirty sandals. My grandmother lifts a large curved knife from the ground. She positions it close to the chicken's neck. My eyes jerk to the right and notice others move away. An unknown hand shakes my shoulder for me to move away, but I stay. "Bismillah, Allahu Akbar." "In the name of God, Allah is great," she mutters. Then with a fast wisp, she slits the chicken's throat. Blood spills out as the panicking chicken flounders from side to side, its head remaining partially attached as it bleeds out. A thick vein falls out of the neck and reveals the broken spine. The chicken extends its wing to fly but tumbles over. I splay my fingers out in a fan against my breastbone. I scan the crowd looking for another terrified face, but all I see are calm ones waiting for the chicken to die. I move my right foot forward, but retreat when I see my grandmother gazing at me. She picks up the chicken by its feet and places it on top of the hay. The flopping finally stops. I do not care that my grandmother brought this chicken for me. I promise that I will never eat it. Dinner time arrives, and there sits the chicken in front of me, served in a white bowl with a gold trim. Rice and vegetables and other foods displayed on plain gray plates circle the rich yellow-brown, succulent chicken curry. Tender pieces of white meat fall off the bone and bathe in the thick gravy. Yums and ums waltz with the aromatic steam from the chicken. My grandmother dips and swirls a golden spoon into the chicken curry. She finally lifts a piece of heaven and puts it on my plate. It was delicious.
That was Tradition, written and read by Afreen Chowdhury. With brilliantly depicted dialogue, our final story tonight captures both a frightening visit to an emergency room and the poignant relationship between a daughter and her ailing mum. Let's listen now as Afreen Chowdhury reads her story, Emergency.
Emergency by Afreen Chowdhury. The hospital glass doors separate and let us in and a gust of warm air out into the cold February night. My hair blows back, the shades of brown teased by the breeze. Amu, Mom, and I follow two tall paramedics into the chaos that is the emergency room. I stretch my right arm across the small hump on Amu's back. I hold her left hand in mine and guide her to a short black chair. I stand. Gurneys and beds with sterilized blue sheets line the hall. Nurses in navy blue and red scrubs scurry from patient to patient, taking vitals and assessing them. I look at a tall, plump man strapped to a gurney in front of us. A yellow plastic structure secures his neck and head. In my mind, I pray that he does not end up paralyzed. "Hi," says one of the paramedics when he returns. "We need to register your mom." He looks at Amu, then at me. I nod. "Just go there, through those doors, and register. Then stay in the waiting area until you're called." He smiles at me, and then looks at his paramedic friends who watch us. I smile back and help Amu stand. "Thank you." Amu had 2 strokes in the past 10 years. The first stroke paralyzed about 3/4 of the right side of her body. She still has some function in her right leg. I have been her primary caregiver since I was 9 years old. 2 days ago, the right side of Amu's face began to droop, and her speech slurred. 2 common symptoms of a stroke. This would be her 3rd stroke. Her final stroke, perhaps. My gaze swivels over the waiting room, looking for a place for Amu and me to sit. A television plays quietly in one corner, a distraction I hope helps us keep our mind off her condition. We sit at the back of the room. Floor-to-ceiling windows stand behind us. I look outside to check if Abu, Dad, and Paya, my brother, have arrived. Red and yellow ambulance lights dance across my face. Red, yellow, red, yellow. The smell of burnt coffee irritates my nose. I glance beside the TV and notice a silver-haired Caucasian man drinking black coffee with trembling hands. He keeps wiping his running nose with the same soggy tissue. Amu's thin eyelids fold and wilt over her near-black eyes. I tap her shoulder, then mine, and she gently lowers her head sideways. Her straight black hair falls onto my turquoise hoodie. I move a clump of oily hair from her flushed cheek. And then she coughs, a sound so common in the emergency room that no one looks up. I see a table full of torn magazines beside Amu's chair. I wish I could reach for one. I stare down at my hands, twiddling and knotting them, as if doing so will hold back the anxiety inside me. The patients and their families try their best to conceal the pain that brought them here, but wry faces break through the facade. "Jolly Chowdhury?" A short blonde nurse calls out, pushing up her thick-rimmed glasses. "Here!" I raise my arm. Amu and I follow the nurse past 2 heavy gray doors. "Call your father," Amu stutters. "Call him now," she insists. Okay, I will. Let's go to the room first." The nurse leads us to a room dominated by a bed with dropped guardrails. Amu wobbles to the bed and sits down. I glide my hands along the sterile sheets. The bed feels bumpy with padding and sheets that try to disguise the plastic over the mattress. "There is a phone attached to the bed with a cord and a call button beside it. Please only use it for emergencies. Another nurse will come to take your mom's blood." The nurse brings the clipboard to her chest and treads away. "Thank you!" I shout out, hoping she heard me. "Help me," my mom whispers. She tries to lift her legs onto the bed and fails. I collect her legs in my arms and put them up onto the bed. The bed squeaks and jerks. Amul's left hand spreads out and touches the patterned curtains that hang from the ceiling for privacy. A birch wood nightstand and uncomfortable-looking purple chair sit next to each other. I sit on the chair and pull off my winter jacket. A painting of a daffodil on the pale pastel wall and old wooden furniture decorate the room. Feel the cold, institutional tile floors through my flats. The room is windowless with only a whiteboard. I assume the board is for drawing figures to explain illnesses to patients. I gaze out the door and see a man in his late 40s connected to an IV pole with a digital monitoring device. The machine beeps every 2 seconds and the man moans and grunts along with it. His room is a hospital musical. He lets out one loud gasp and holds his throat. I hear squeaks of rubber soles heading our way. A doctor and 2 nurses enter his room and shut the door. A Filipino nurse walks in. "Hi, Jolly Chowdhury?" She nods her head at Amu while unfolding a white hospital gown with navy blue polka dots. "Yes," Amu says with a smile and nod. "Is this your mom?" "Yes," I answer with pride. "Okay, tell her to put this on, okay?" I lift off Amu's red t-shirt with care, and she covers her breasts with embarrassment. I discover age spots and scars that create constellations on her back. "I have to take your blood, okay?" The nurse extends her vowels. "Okay, okay." Amu nods with her usual sweet smile. The nurse pulls 2 lavender latex-free gloves from the box on a table close to the door. Snap, snap. I can see her wedding ring through the tight gloves. The nurse takes out a 1-inch needle connected to an open tube. She feels Amu's left forearm for a thick, bouncy vein. Amu makes a sad face at me. "Aw." I cup her face and kiss her cheek. "It's not going to hurt, Miss Chowdhury." "No, no, no." Amu shakes her head and tries to move away. But the nurse pushes the needle into an engorged vein near her elbow. "Sss." Amu hisses and winces. I rub her back, feeling the area where the ends of the hospital gown don't meet. "One more tube, Mrs. Chowdhury. It's okay." Amu frowns and looks at me, then looks away. "Dushtomelok." "Bad lady," she mutters in Bengali. I giggle and continue to rub her back. 7 hours pass. It's 3 in the morning. Amu is heavy-eyed and groggy. She surrenders to her body and falls asleep. I sit on the bed with her. My mouth and throat feel dry. On top of the nightstand is a pink pitcher and cup filled with water and crushed ice. I pour a cold glass of water and let out an "ah" after a big gulp. I rest my head back and look up. The ceiling consists of white rectangles with lots of small holes and faded brown stains. I count the rectangles from the front of the room to the back. 5. What if she dies? My mouth becomes dry again. My eyes fill up. I blink to try and hold back the tears. When I was a baby, Amu stood by my crib, watched me sleep, and smiled at my every breath. Now, in her old age, I sit and watch Amu sleep, stroke her hair as she breathes, and hug her to give her warmth. Amu waited in the hospital when I broke my chin, and now I wait for her in this emergency room. Peacefully curled up in a ball, she sleeps. I want to hold Amu just as she held me when I was a child. My bottom lip trembles. I bite it to stop. A tear streams down my cheek and off my chin. I try not to wake Amu with my whimpering, but I cannot stop. I slide my sleeves over my hands and wipe my tears. "Stop it, stop it, stop it," I whisper to myself. I look up at the wall, dab my face, and pull up my sleeves. Deep breath in, deep breath out. I fix my posture and tie up my hair. I pull the ponytail tight with both hands. I look like Amu. I look like Amu in the 80s. Amu lets out a little snore. I beam. "Hello, Mrs. Chowdhury." The doctor walks in unannounced. "How are you doing?" "Huh?" I support Amu's back and sit her up. "Oh, okay." "We have the results for your mother," he says in a strong, confident voice. "Okay." I hold my breath. "She did not have another stroke. She has something called Bell's palsy. The symptoms are similar to a stroke, but the test showed some bacteria in her brain that told otherwise." "Oh, is it bad?" "No, the symptoms should go away in a week or two with the medication I'm prescribing. This illness is actually common, but more in young people. You have nothing to worry about." The doctor looks up with a quick smile, then turns back to scribbling something on his clipboard. "Oh, wow, thank you." I smile and look at Amu. She looks confused. What happened?" She did not understand his fast speech. What did he say?" "Okay, here is her prescription." He seems in a hurry. "Do you have any other questions?" "No, that would be all. Thank you." "You're welcome," he says loudly and shakes my mom's left hand. "Have a nice day, Mrs. Chowdhury." "Bye-bye." My mom waves at the doctor as he marches away. Amu and I look at each other. I take her weak hand and hold it to my heart. I smile. She smiles.
That was Afreen Chowdhury reading her story, Emergency. This concludes Life Rattle number 1291. My name is Lori Callis. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next time for a Life Rattle Classic program hosted by Virginia Ashbury.